Hi, Kate. Thank you so much for being on this show. And like I just ended up reading one of your books, and that's where I came to know more about you. So I have a podcast by the name Yovna the Ageless, which is where I try to bring in people from Eastern modalities and talk about Ayurveda, yoga, traditional Chinese medicine, balance, energy sciences. So all of these things. So I, by virtue of reading one of your books, I came across you, and that's where I just started reading about your books and then about you, and I figured out how beautifully you're merging Ayurveda with yoga, and specifically being an authorized Ashtanga teacher, that there's a lot that Ayurveda can help you achieve in your practice. So that's how I came across you, and thank you so much for being here on this podcast. So before actually we move the session, I would very briefly want to introduce you to our audience, and then we can just get on to this conversation. So Kate O'Donnell is a certified Ayurveda practitioner. She is an authorized Ashtanga yoga teacher, and she's also a best-selling Ayurvedic author. She's also the founder of Ayurvedic Living Institute. Kate holds about 20 years of experience studying and practicing the wisdom of Ayurveda and yoga. She teaches yoga in Boston and Portland and travels to India annually for study. So, Kate, my first question to you is going to be, how did yoga and Ayurveda, or Ayurveda and yoga, whatever happened to you first, at all happened to you?
Yeah, good question. I would say the yoga happened first. I traveled to India when I was 19. I was just always interested in the place. I knew nothing about
Oh,
yoga.
nice.
Yeah, it was more India than yoga at the time. And as a student over there, I started practicing yoga just with whomever was around. And maybe it was because I was in the South, but every time it would be Ashtanga yoga from my part. So
I know. Most people coming in from visiting India from countries outside India, I think it's that their first interaction is with Ashtanga yoga.
right. Yeah, so that I started practicing yoga while I was in India. And so I kept traveling to India every year to study yoga in different places with different people, but I got very sick with parasitic infections along the first few years, and that was how I got involved with Ayurveda, was to sort of heal my parasitic problems, and to I couldn't eat anything. I was a complete mess. Yeah, my body had a lot of adjustments to do, coming from the northern part of the United States, and then suddenly being in India, South India, tropical weather, back and forth
Yes, it takes
between.
some time to get adjusted to the weather.
So I started the Ayurveda in a Panchakarma, so doing a sort of a deep dive with a doctor in Mysore.
So you were actually taking the treatment, or you started studying as you got into it?
I started by taking treatment because I was sick, and I didn't even know what Ayurveda was. It was just I just landed at a clinic, it, sort of a mess. A friend took me to
I
this
know.
place,
I know. Yes.
and that was how. So I just, not knowing anything about Ayurveda, had this experience in undergoing the treatments at a small hospital, and it really changed the way that I viewed my body and medicine. And I was very much a spiritual experience for me. And
Oh
that.
yes, it is definitely. That there's something about that, something about Ayurveda, like whether it is the food or these Panchakarma practices or anything, you feel that connect with yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I had been looking for in yoga. And so I find it in both of these traditions now. And so because I was so intrigued by the experience, the spiritual experience that I had had through Ayurveda, I started studying. And it was difficult at that time to figure out as a Westerner how to study.
Yeah, and I think considering your age, I mean, being in an age where people actually want to just explore and live their best life, you chose the path of yoga and Ayurveda,
Yes.
which is very it feels good to have such people who kind of think of getting into these modalities early at that age. And I'm sure your experience, your learnings, your practice, and everything is it shows the way you project yourself, the kind of in your, it definitely shows in your books and the kind of knowledge that you pass on. So Kate, since we are discussing our topic for today is going to be self-care with Ayurveda, I just want to start with the very basic. As per Ayurveda or even yoga, if I bring in the two modalities together, what does self-care actually mean?
Well, in Ayurveda, there are preventive measures that we take that very much have to do with the daily routines and the seasonal routines. So I would say self-care in Ayurveda is adjusting your relationship with your body, with your environment, the food that you eat, the cleansings you do for your body. These things shift a little bit based on the season. I would say, in terms of self-care, probably the Dinacharya practices, which most of these practices happen in the morning, the morning routines, that might be the greatest gift that Ayurveda can give to us at this time in history, to get up and care for your body first before you do anything else.
And so, from the self-care perspective, where does yoga fit in into this definition of self-care, which Ayurveda brings about?
Well, for me, it was a very obvious connect because I had learned to practice yoga in the morning. So morning, it's that Brahma Muhurta, the god time. And so for me, there's this real connect between the two systems in that they both sort of take God into account, that God is a part of your health and devotional practice is a part of your self-care, And so to put the two together for me, it's like I'm taking care of my spirit with the yoga, I'm taking care of my vehicle, my temple, my body with the Ayurveda. And the two in that way, they come from the same anatomical background. So, the things that we say when we talk about yoga kriyas, yoga asanas, they're the same words that we use when we describe the Ayurveda practices. And that makes a lot of sense to me. I think in the West, the yoga is being understood and described through Western anatomy. And I think that's problematic. I think we get confused when we
Do
do
you
that.
think so?
I mean, it's not only problematic. I think that kind of anatomy, for example, about like your muscle sinews and things,
Physical anatomy, more of physical anatomy, not the spiritual anatomy.
I think it's helpful in terms of another way to perceive or explain the experiences that you have when you practice yoga, And then we can also describe it through the Ayurvedic lens, the Samkhya philosophy. And then we're using the same language. To me, when I started to study Ayurveda, I understood yoga so much more.
And it becomes easier. Like if you've studied one modality, getting into the other is more is most often it's obvious, and your understanding definitely is at a different level, right?
Definitely, they speak to each other.
So just I'm a little curious to know, like you visited India not with a thought of getting into yoga or Ayurveda. It was just by chance that you had an encounter with yoga initially. And when you decided to actually study yoga, and that to the most intense practice of yoga, getting into that, what was your experience? Like, you did not come with that intention. Neither you knew that you want to do this. Otherwise, if you have that thought in mind, you generally go prepared and you know what to expect. But in your case, it was quite sudden, and your age, you were quite young at that time. So when you got into it, when you started practicing Ashtanga, specifically at the Shala itself, how was your experience? Like, what did you go through? Because there are a lot of emotional shifts also that you go through when you get into, such kind of a practice. Physically, of course, you're experiencing the changes. So what is it that you experienced in your practice? And how long did it last? Like, how long did you study this entire thing?
I spent 20 years going back and forth to Mysore. Yeah, so I was very deeply immersed in that particular style of yoga for 20 years. And I think in the beginning, going to, again, I didn't even know at the time that how old I was, but
That's why I asked that question, because it was something you just chanced upon and you started.
Yes, yeah. And I, you know, I'm an intense person, especially as a, like in my 20s. I would, if it wasn't Ashtanga yoga, I would have been doing something else crazy. Yeah, that's just my personality.
That's a very nice answer, because I think more of a Pitta kind personality who just wants to go ahead and do and achieve, and I can relate to that.
Yes, and I really wanted, I'm very much an embodied person. Yeah, I understand everything around me through this body, you know, through my senses. And what I learned so much from the yoga practice was about how to feel my energy body, how to feel my prana, and to move it, you know, to use my breath and my consciousness to move my prana, to shift my prana, which is a very important part of Ayurvedic medicine.
And
You know,
I
so.
guess that's one part that's missing in the Western understanding of, medicine and body, because we are focusing too much on the physicality, and how the prana flows has a deep impact on the shifts that will come to ha start to happen to your body and the mind as well.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. I was lucky because when I started really studying Ayurveda, I already had personal experiences with the prana body, you know, and knew, you know, so I started learning about, say, the different vayus, the five movements.
The pranas, the five pranas, yes.
Yeah. And so I'd be like, oh, I know those, you know, I know what those feel like. Yeah.
So, like in your yoga practice, because it was Ashtanga that you practiced, in your practice, did this concept of prana actually did come in into your practice, or you learned about, like, I mean, you experienced it in your yoga practice and then you learned it in Ayurveda. Was that the case, or you were actually practicing with the learning in your yoga practice only?
I would say in the practice, you know, our teachers said very little. There's very little talking, very little explaining, you know. So of
It's
course, a lot.
internalization, more of
Yeah.
internalization that you do,
Right. So we're having these experiences. We don't really have words to describe them. When I started to study Ayurveda, I was like, oh, here's the words to describe this.
So you get those, got those words for the experiences that you had in your Ashtanga practice, and that's interesting.
Yeah.
Great. So, Kate, I have another question. Like, since we are talking self-care, very curiously, I do understand that yoga in itself is also self-care. You're working on your body, you're working on your mind, you're working on your entire self. But as Ayurveda specifically, talks about, has a language for self-care. Like, you talk about foods, you talk about lifestyle, you talk about dinacharya, you talk about ritucharya. Does this concept of self-care also exist in yoga, or does yoga borrow these concepts of self-care from Ayurveda?
That's a good question. I mean, I think there's so many different lineages of yoga, you know, it'd be hard to generalize, but it seemed I always felt that yoga was more very much about self-transformation and evolution
It
of
is.
consciousness, right? And in Ayurveda, I found ways of very gross ways of working with the body. Because even when you're doing your yoga and you're, you know, doing your utmost to practice, still sometimes you get some infection, you know, or your digestion goes wrong, or, you know,
Maybe,
things.
or maybe some injury, at the bare minimum,
Right? Yeah. And so with the Ayurveda, I really felt as a householder, it helps me just, you know, show up for my duties, not only because in yoga, I learned how to do yoga. But I also have
No,
this other,
that makes sense.
you know, that needs to be lived. Yeah.
That's a good explanation. I like that. I mean, yoga you're doing for yourself, but Ayurveda gives you a chance to kind of keep yourself fit to be available for others, like for doing your duties.
It's
Great.
true. Yeah.
Great. So, now, switching back to Ayurveda again, when it is about self-care, for a person, for somebody who's not very familiar with yoga and Ayurveda, and who comes across this concept of self-care and says, okay, I want to go a traditional way of taking care of myself. So, from Ayurveda perspective, what do you think is the beginning for that person? Is it shift, starting to change the foods, or starting to understand themselves first, or starting to bring about changes in their daily routine, or seasonally shifting, like where has to be the beginning, or it's like person to person, wherever you get the that end meeting with for you, you start from there. So how to start actually?
I would say some of the things I start with are Dinacharya morning practices, like tongue scraping. You know, scraping the tongue, it removes some toxins from the body. That's such a, and it's the very first thing that we do. You know, so I'll encourage people to sort of have a tongue cleaner to keep it somewhere where they can see it next to the toothbrush, you know, and sort of start.
Yeah, that's important. You see it and you do it. If it's not there, it's gone.
You forget, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I feel like that sort of thing, rinse the eyes with cool water, you know, clean the teeth, drink some hot water. I feel like that's a very simple cleansing routine that is a, it's a great place to start because once you get your day started with some self-care, it just gets better from
Yeah,
there, you know.
that's true. I mean, you in the beginning you connect with your own self, whatever way it be, and then it just flows in.
Yeah. I like to start with a little Dinacharya, and then I do. It has the reason that I wrote cookbooks was because there were so many questions about
Yeah,
food and
yeah.
what to eat, you
And I
know.
think you've answered that beautifully. I'll come to that question as well because I'm very curious to know. Rather, I think, well, most of the books that I have read look at your foods from Vata, Pitta, and Kapha perspective. But you've gone a step, thought of it differently from the Gunas perspective. So, how that did that entire understanding actually come in? I mean, and how does that help? I mean, you eat as per Vata, Pitta, or Kapha, type, or you eat as per the Gunas. How does it make a difference?
Right. So if we look at the gunas are those 20 words we use to describe our all substances in our environment, you know, so they might be heating or cooling or dry or moist.
Characteristics basically of the
Yeah.
universal characteristics, I would say.
Right. Where the doshas, I think, can be a little more complicated for newer people to understand. So as an Ayurvedic practitioner, I would be working with so many people, and we would have to talk about food because the gunas of our food is what makes it medicine or poison. It's what makes it helpful or non-helpful. So that
So
we.
I like sorry I'm cutting you there, but I have again a curious question here. Like we are talking of gunas in the foods, or we are talking of gunas in a person. What is coming together here?
So the gunas are also in the person. So a person, you know, our substance layer, right? So I might be feeling dry, like maybe I have dry skin, you know, or a dry mouth, my eyes feel dry, my hair starts to get frizzy and dry. So I'm thinking, oh, there's a dry quality at work in me, you know. So I want to reach for some balancing gunas from my environment, from my food. Perhaps I would put oil on my body, you know, do oil massage, but I would be very wary of foods that are dry, as those will increase the dryness that I'm noticing, you know, in my skin, my hair. And I would be looking for things that are moist, things that contain fats, you know. So we balance the qualities in our body by what we eat primarily. So if there's too much dry, we eat something moist. If there's too much moist, we eat something dry.
So that's where, if I understand that right, your book actually helps for a person who is not able to understand this concept of Vata, Pitta, and Kapha, can actually look into the properties or what's going on with them. It's like too much of dryness going on with them, or say at the mind level, too much of overthinking going on, and then they can associate those characteristics with the gunas, like, and what are the opposite qualities that will start to bring in the balance, and that's how they create the association between the two. Is that right?
Exactly. And then, you know, there we are experiencing our bodies. So for yoga
Yeah.
people, it's perfect, you know.
You know what? I mean, it sounds so simple, and I often feel that simplicity is so complicated. I mean, for the people, I mean, it's so simple that you just have to go by what's going on and bring in an opposite quality to create that balance. But we don't relate to it. We really want to get into those complicated concepts of how medicine brings things forward, and we want to get into the that deepest nutrient which will work, or that deepest supplement that's going to make a difference without actually understanding. All will come in place once the balance happens.
It's true. It's true. That's what I saw in my practice with people is why I wrote the book this way. Because I thought,
Oh,
you
that's
know,
nice.
we need to understand what does dryness feel like in this body? And then what are the foods that will be more dry? What are the foods that will be opposite of dry?
And just help me understand one more thing. If and correct me if I'm wrong. When you start to feel dryness in the body, either your hair or skin or brittleness, there is a specific quality that your mind is also carrying, right? I mean, you may feel a little more colder towards others. You may start to behave a little more disconnected to others. Does that happen, or is it something that's a separate thing?
I think that we can definitely see correlations like that. If we were to get technical, with the Ayurveda, we'd say a different language. There is a different language to describe the mind, which is the Mahagunas, which our yoga students will be familiar with, sattva, rajas, tamas. But you will also find that qualities also affect the mind, like, if you picture like a piece of fruit, so there's one that's like ripe and moist and soft and juicy, and then there's one that's dried out. It's hard, it's rough.
A dry fruit and a so I think the closest association is going to be a fresh fruit and a dry fruit of like say maybe a dried apple or a fresh apple.
Like one that's dried out is it's difficult to permeate, so you're saying the mind, the person was dry might be like, more separate or feel colder towards others. That's, it's like the difference between how a ripe fruit will yield when you bite it because it's moist and juicy, versus something that's hard and dry. And when we get hard and dry, it can also make us, change the way that we react to our environment, the way that the mind is perceiving the self and the environment.
But that understanding is so beautiful, like, and again, so simple, which is complicated. So, okay. So, okay, coming back to both yoga and Ayurveda, I can help us also understand that we know that Ayurveda and yoga follow the similar physiology and anatomy concepts, which is coming from the Sankhya philosophy, right? So, if we have to think of self-care from the the perspective of anatomy, which is the base for yoga and Ayurveda, how should your day look like? Bringing these two things together and also understanding the anatomy where these two modalities are coming from, and then if how because see where this question is coming from, it's a little complicated, but I really want to talk about this. In my practice also, I come across people who would want to bring in one single aspect of any of these modalities. Say somebody says I want to start yoga and I don't have time in the morning and I'll practice in the evening. There would be somebody who would want to say, okay, I want to bring in Ayurveda also in my practice, and in the name of Ayurveda maybe they would just want to bring in say some Ayurveda home remedy, and thinking that okay, I've merged the two. But we know it doesn't work like that. It's coming from a higher source, it's coming from a different understanding. So keeping that understanding where the universal laws are in place. Mornings is the time for yoga, and the way it's going to give you the differences when you practice yoga in the morning is it's not the same experience that you will have once when you do it in the evening. Of course, for relaxation you do, that's a separate story. But so coming from the space of understanding the universal energies or the base of anatomy and physiology of yoga and Ayurveda, if a person wants to get into these two modalities starting their practices, how should their day look like?
Well, if we look at the Samkhya, the chart, of the constituents of reality, we get down to the bottom right corner is the five elements. So the five elements, that is the anatomy of the physical body. And those elements are also the anatomy of our universe, right? And so the body and the universe around us is undergoing sort of natural changes. From sort of sunrise to sunset, So when we say what should our day look like, it's like our day really should flow with the sun, with the rising and the setting of the sun. And so when the sun is like its highest, when it's at the zenith at midday, everything is hotter, right? There's more heat in the atmosphere. The digestive fire is also hotter at that time, like the fire inside the body. And so that's sort of the time for lunch, you know, the midday lunch.
You know,
In the morning time is when you really get that clear quality before there's all the disturbance, you know, of movement in our environment. It's very still, it's stable. And so that's the time where we can work with the yoga, you know, so we start out with a very calm and stable and clear atmosphere in which to move the prana, you know. And then the appetite will increase after practice, you know, so we can sort of eat late morning, midday, and we will digest the food better and be able to digest more complicated foods at midday. And then everything is quieting down, calming down as the sun moves.
Slow down, yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess that's very well understood in the, you know, as per the understanding of science as well. Like there are certain hormones which in the morning are working for you, and the understanding of those hormones is very similar to how Ayurveda puts it in a language of actually practicing it in a daily routine. So there's a very deep-rooted logic to what Ayurveda actually very simply depicts as a lifestyle, and which I think science is now proving in the language of, say, hormones. How certain hormones are active in the morning and their role for in your body through the day, how some of them are happening in the evening and their role for you, for your body and mind in the evening. So I think there's a lot of synergy between, the language is different, but there's a synergy between understanding why mornings for a certain, you know, for certain things and why evenings for certain things.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. The circadian rhythms are Ayurveda, you know, when you learn them.
So, but I can tell you one thing, like, you know, before I got into yoga, for quite a long time, constantly, when I used to wake up in the morning, specifically after sunrise, I know my day is not going to be good because I would be confused the whole day. I mean, it used to be lots of thoughts in my mind. And if I look at the execution, I could hardly work on two or three thoughts that I had in the morning. So, after getting into yoga, starting to practice, I think that there's a level of detoxification also happening to you. And then when you practice in the morning, it's a different energy moving in your mind. You know what you're supposed to do through the day, and you just keep following. I mean, you just keep flowing. You don't have to actually put effort to get into that flow. So yeah, that definitely makes sense that circadian rhythm or Ayurveda practices put that language into a practical way of living your life on a daily basis. Okay. So another, you know, important question I think that nobody talks about, but I'm quite curious because I come from a space of actually moving from the world of nutrition to yoga and Ayurveda. The understanding of nutrition for me when I got into, you know, the wellness domain about 10 years back. So my journey started with macrobiotic nutrition, which I got certified in, and gradually I moved into yoga. And then I'm starting to, you know, very new to Ayurveda, but you're getting deeper into the concepts. So one thing that I realized that, and as a part of my journey, I also ended up learning raw food nutrition, which really captivated my interest. I was very, you know, inclined towards raw food nutrition. I still am, but now I get a little confused because, you know, the more you start to learn Ayurveda, you realize that once you start to understand those qualities that we're talking about, you know that even if you like it, it may not work for you because your qualities are opposite of what the, you know, raw food nutrition may give you. So coming from the cleanse space of cleanse, Ayurveda has a very strong focus on internal cleanse, seasonal cleanse. If we look at it from the perspective of how the world is moving today, from the cleanse perspective, it is a lot of raw food stuff coming in, a lot of juices and smoothies and all that stuff coming in, which of course will give you some level of cleansing. And on the other hand, if we look at Ayurveda also talks about cleansing, but it talks about it from the perspective of, say, khichdi cleanse, where simple carbs and proteins are becoming a part of your diet even if you're cleansing. Whereas in the modern understanding, your carbs and proteins and fats mostly will be out. It would be more of vitamins and minerals you're using to cleanse yourself. So, you know, we are cleansing both ways, but how do these two cleanses actually differ? I mean, you know, from the Ayurveda perspective, how does that cleanse work?
One of the things about doing something like khichdi cleanse, so using this combination of rice and mung bean, and you can also do a congee, you know, you can do a mung bean soup. There's sort of some different varieties there, but the ingredients of the mung bean, the rice, ghee, spices. The idea is that the raw foods will disturb the vata dosha. So raw foods are like that rough.
Yeah, dry, rough. Yeah.
Yeah, they're dry, they're rough, they're hard. And so a person has to be able to withstand that kind of a cleanse. If a person is strong, if a person's body is stout, you know, they have a lot of moisture, then they can probably handle that. The Ayurvedic style of cleansing is much more gentle. So we're trying to sort of stabilize, I would say we're trying to stabilize blood sugar a little bit by having small amounts of protein. The reason that we use the mung bean is that the Ayurveda texts say of all, it's like one of the favorite foods, you know, traditionally. Yeah. And it said that the mung bean does not produce any disorder in any body type. So
and very interestingly, I tell you what, specifically for this mung bean, it's very commonly used in traditional Chinese medicine also. It's one of the favorite foods in another ancient modality, which is directly nothing to do with Ayurveda. So definitely there is something about mung beans that these ancient traditions are talking or, you know, boasting about.
Right. Because they'll sort of still sustain the body, but without causing any imbalance or any toxicity. So the idea is that you sort of have this food you can put in the body that will keep a person going and will fend off imbalances. And then the body will start cleaning itself. Because we're...
Is it a process, like say 1 day cleanse or a 2 day cleanse or a 10 day cleanse? Is it you have to be on a specific schedule for that? Or it's like one day you decide, okay, I'll give my system a break and I'll have khichdi the whole day and bring in some, you know, complementary foods along with it. So that 1 day is enough. How should it be done?
It would depend on the person, you know, on how much toxicity is there and what the person's trying to do. I think one of the indicators we always look for is the appetite. You know, if a person feels hungry, you know, and then when you eat food, there's very little digestive byproducts. These are all signs of good health, you know, so no toxicity. And so many of us just get into places in life where it's not like that. You know, we either lose the appetite, don't have a good hunger, or we have bloating, gas, hyperacidity, these kind of products that happen when we eat. Mm-hmm. Those are signs that a cleanse might be time, you know, to do something like that. And so a person could do a very simple diet, like khichdi is the easiest thing. It contains digestive spices, which will help balance.
Yeah, that also gives that stimulating effect and that release effect.
Right. And we could shift the spices that we use depending on what qualities that person is in need of. Mm. If we give a lot of hot, sharp, dry spices, we'll get more of a cleansing effect. If we want to use salt, like we might use like a lot of ginger, you know, turmeric. Mm-hmm. If we wanted to soften it, we would use softer things like cinnamon, cardamom, coriander. And all these
I think I can relate to that. The South Indian sambar, which is like very spicy and chili. And if you have a cold, I think that's one of the best things to consume. That immediately releases and opens up this entire tract.
Right. Or the rasam. Everyone is always serving me with rasam when I'm sick. Yeah.
I know. That's one of the staple in South India. You'll find it everywhere.
Yeah. So I think most people probably need more than one day on khichdi to remedy a disturbance in the digestion. Some people 3 days, some people might be more like five, some people.
Okay. So it's person to person, how much cleanse you need and how much time will it take for you to cleanse and the kind of effect also, because I see when you go on a very drastic kind of a cleanse, like which happens through fruits and juices that we're talking about, the symptoms also may be, I mean, you may feel like you've gotten yourself into a mess initially, though it's a cleanse going on, but then the symptoms may be really hard for you to experience.
And it can be difficult to get back to eating good food again. That can, you know, when you do a very harsh cleanse, sometimes you feel wonderful while you're on it. But then when you start to eat again, you know, within a week or so, all the byproducts, the digestive problems they come back.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, Kit, like another thing, like if we think of like Ayurveda looks at diseases from the perspective of various stages coming in before an illness actually starts to show up outwards, that there are different levels going on inside the body, and it may take, say, months or years for any disease to kind of manifest and start to show up as something how modern science would name it, maybe diabetes or arthritis or any kind of these lifestyle disorders. So from the food self-care perspective, from the using foods for self-care and keeping diseases in mind, and also keeping these various stages of illnesses in mind, how does this entire process of preventive way of life begin? Like, you keep your blood clean, and that will have an impact on the concept of this different dhatus. One dhatu is going to impact the other one, and that's how it goes deeper. So, how do we one, understand diseases from that perspective, and when we think of bringing about changes in a health condition for that specific health condition, how should the Ayurveda diet look like?
The great thing about this way that Ayurveda looks at the causation of disease is that it starts with the early signs and symptoms are often ones that are easy to recognize, and many of them are in the digestion. That's what's so interesting, is it's kind of Ayurveda teaching that all of our problems are actually beginning in the digestion, that once we are not able to digest and assimilate food nicely, it's like the building blocks for problems, you know? So that's why we talk about food, digestion, digestive spices, all these things really are the most important thing. Even if you are working with a more expressed disorder, something that's been, the body's been working on it for 10 or 20 years, one still wants to practice good diet, you know, even if you're working with your Ayurvedic physician and, you're taking all these herbs and you're doing panchakarmas, like you still need to, in your own life, eat the digestible food. So we just look for foods that are easy to digest. And we use always some spices because they help with
I
the
guess the
breath.
magic. It's the spices that do the magic, and simple food just keeps your system sustained to kind of be with that cleanse. I mean, you don't build any weaknesses inside.
Right. And in our most simple, we could say to sort of eat seasonally, to eat the foods that are grown in our environment in the season. That's considered, according to Ayurveda, that's considered the healthiest diet. So those foods are different for everyone depending on their climate, on where they are. But to look for what is coming up out of the ground near you, and to process those foods into dishes that you enjoy with a little bit of digestive spice so that it's breaking down and it's assimilating well.
You know what, like being from India, having grown, born and grown up in India, I can tell you one thing, like our generation is still the generation that has seen the two sides. Like, we've seen our grandparents working in the fields and growing all those seasonal foods, and then eating what is there in the season and being very satiated with whatever is available, and moving on to a way of life where you are quite away from how things are grown. The only access that you have is to these stores where you get these fruits and vegetables or other kind of foods, and these stores would be full of all kinds of foods, global, international, and all kinds of it. So, for the coming generations, I seriously believe it becomes really difficult to understand this concept of seasonal eating, because they haven't seen what comes in the season. All year through, everything is available.
I know. I think it has something to do with some of our prevalent digestive problems and health problems that we see. I do think that I wonder if in the next 20, 30 years we're going to see more local eating.
I mean, I think the small little initiatives people are taking to bring about this awareness, and people like you who are actually, talking about seasonal eating and bringing in all that awareness. So, yeah, I think the on the other side, people are also coming up creating that awareness for sure. Okay, so Kate, now switching to yoga, you have been teaching Ashtanga yoga, and you're an authorized Ashtanga yoga teacher, and to the intermediate level series. So, how do you bring in Ayurveda in that intensity of yoga that you practice or you teach? I mean, One, how do you bring in? And secondly, at the shala, which is where the source of Ashtanga yoga is coming from, is Ayurveda an important aspect, or the Ayurveda principles an important aspect of the practice, or the two are separate?
There are some things, I feel like there are some, so many things about most traditional yoga practices that contain Ayurveda, like the time of day, since, you know?
I know. I mean, I come from Shivananda school, so I that's
Right.
where my first experience of living in Ayurveda and yoga lifestyle actually happened, where living in an ashram, I realized, okay, you know, the concepts are coming from Ayurveda as well. It's not only yoga.
Right.
But yeah, to what extent you bring in is something that's, I think that's very personal, school to school.
Yeah. For me, I offer Ayurveda something students can they can learn from me. Not everyone chooses that, you know. Some people just want to do the asana practice.
So is that from the diet perspective that you recommend, or is it from the Dhinacharya perspective, or lifestyle perspective, or seasonal perspective? What's your focus on that specific self-care from Ayurveda in your
You know, interestingly, the reason that I let's began to study Ayurveda in and like seek certification in this country was because I could see that my yoga students were not eating the right food for their
That's
yoga.
interesting. I mean, there was a need to learn it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I know where you come from. Yeah,
Right. You know,
I have seen
especially
my peers also. Like when I was learning, I could see eating. I mean, after yoga practice, they used to have a treat of all that fried coming in, and I mean that used to happen in at the first place where I learned yoga. So I realized what's going on. I mean, what are we doing here?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
you know, not everyone cares so much about, you know, their yoga practice, but many of us do. And there are foods that we can eat, like these easy to digest, nicely spiced,
Yeah.
seasonal foods that
Yes.
really support the transformations that we're seeking with our yoga practice. And then there are so many other foods that will actually block that, you know, that will create obstructions in the body. And so it's like you're it's okay to eat, you know, the wrong food sometimes and still do yoga, right? As yogis, we probably have very superior digestion because
Yes.
we do all this work. But at some points I start to think, you know, maybe we should be working together with these things. Maybe the food that
Yeah.
we take should all be of a pure form, you know, that also
Yeah.
supports what we
And
desire.
that's where I think this concept of sadhana actually comes in, where you dedicate yourself to this way of life. I mean, otherwise there are a lot of distractions available, and you do your practice and then you go out and enjoy and do whatever and then come back again and get onto your mat. So, you know, that's one track people follow, but the literal track where the two sciences come together is where you actually live these two sciences together. I mean, in your lifestyle, in your diet, in your practice, everything.
Right, and everything is really having to do with sort of navigating our days along with this flow of nature's elements.
Yeah.
You know, it's so whether we're using yoga or food or deep daily practices, all these things like our sleep, when we eat, you know, what we eat, who we talk
Yeah.
to, how much we talk, you know, all these things are a part of the overall picture of our energy.
Yeah.
Now and where it's being
Yes.
channeled. Yeah. So it's for me, I think the yoga has created so much sensitivity to my body,
Yes.
my prana, that I can tell when I eat something if it's beneficial or not. You know, it's very
I
clear.
think you get to you start to get that sense of you actually you know, move above physicality to sense energies. I was yesterday I was talking to somebody who was a yoga teacher in Spain, also one of the founders of this mindfulness app. So he's a good friend. So he just, you know, dropped a message on Instagram saying that the weather is changing and there's a shift in energies that's happening, which tends to give my mind some kind of lows during those transition times. And I could so deeply relate to what he mentioned that I wrote him back that, you know, these are the changes that even I experience, but I don't ever find words to explain that there is some energetic shift happening when the seasonal shifts are happening. And I remember when I was a child, I used to ask my friends, "Do you feel the same?" And I hardly could find anybody who's feeling the same, because I think we are too much into the outside world. Once you internalize, you actually start to connect with those energies and you know what's going on. If there's dip in energies in the outside environment, you tend to experience within you as well. But some people tend to kind of take it out in the form of, you know, binging more, going out, eating, or, you know, getting into entertainment activities. And for people who get associated with the energy sciences like Ayurveda, yoga, or various others, start, tend to kind of internalize it. They know what's going on. So, somewhere their senses become stronger to understand all of that. Do you think so?
Definitely. Yeah, I feel like you hit on one of those most important aspects of yoga, which is to draw the attention inward,
Yeah.
you know.
Yes.
And so one of the things that I find so special about food is that eating is an opportunity to turn the attention inward. Even though it's we often, I think, culturally use it as an external outward activity, you know, where
But
we're
that's where that feel good factor when you eat food is nothing but, you know, you're connecting with your own self. So yeah, very nicely put across. Great. So Kate, since we're talking of energies, and Ayurveda talks like correlates your senses with energies quite a lot, right? And that's one of the reasons why taking care of senses is very specific or unique aspect of self-care or healthcare in Ayurveda. No one, I don't think any other modality ever talks about it or even thinks of talking about it. So what do you think is the importance of taking care of your senses on a daily basis beyond only sense care? Like, because our senses are directly related to our nervous system and it may have some energetic shifts happening in the body. So what's your take on taking care of senses?
I feel the senses are like windows into the nervous system because they take all the energy or all the information from our external environment, and they comprehend that, they, you know, compute that into a part of us. So they really are like this bridge between the internal and the external, which is very much has to do with yoga, you know. So
And that's why yoga kriyas is like, you know, doing certain kriyas for your ears, eyes, nose, mouth.
right. Because the idea also is that the way that we perceive our world is through these senses. And so if these senses are clouded or imbalanced in some way, then our perception of reality will also be, you know, imbalanced or cloudy. And so, although yes, we're taking care of like the ears and the eyeball, you know, and all of these the gross factors, we're also really tapping into the clarity with which we interact with reality by keeping these senses, you know, free of disturbances. Whether it's overstimulation or actual goop, you know, stuff.
Yeah, no, but exactly. But like, my question on this is like, screen time for most people has gone up drastically. Like, so, you know, and somewhere people don't realize, but it does have an impact on how you start to perceive or think or feel, or it's having an impact on your mind. So, when we talk of sense care and specifically the eyes or maybe the ears, that's kind of listening to different kinds of sounds or maybe music every day. Do you think, yes, of course, too much is definitely having an impact, but we really need to cut down on that time and focus on our senses to kind of get inwards rather than being outside and, you know, getting into all those out, you know, outside modes of entertaining ourselves. So what's your take on that?
It's a difficult one, you know, to manage that imbalance when it's upon us, you know, when we use the senses for external forms of entertainment. It's addictive, you know, it's an
It's
addictive thing.
addictive, yes.
It's very difficult to turn that energy around. I think it's important that we all like are real about that and know that we're dealing with something that is addictive in
Yeah.
nature, like drugs and alcohol. So we don't need to like beat ourselves up about how hard it is, you know, to put this.
Yes, and that it needs some deep level of self-awareness to not do that.
Yeah, it does. It does. And so, you know, things that work for me, I do not you keep my phone in my bedroom. I don't use it for an alarm clock, you know, I don't use it for functions that I'll need in the morning and in the evening. I have like a just a clock, an analog clock that I use for that, and I
I
do
think
not.
that's the best thing, yeah.
Yeah, and I try not to turn the phone on until the morning practices have happened. And I turn it off with the sun. So when the sun
Wow,
is
that's
done,
nice.
you know, or this time of year, it's even before the sun because it's.
That's also, I think that's one of the most important self-care that we need to do with us. I mean, rest of the things are
Yeah,
later.
I agree. I agree. And
Yes.
it's, you know, I just want to, again, for all the people listening who struggle with this, like myself included, it's not easy for me. You know, I really
Yeah.
have to work on this. And it's the nature of that sort of entertainment. It is very addictive, and we are all very caught in that. And I think we need
Exactly.
to replace that activity with something else, you know,
Yes.
so
Something
there's.
constructive, maybe reading a book or doing something for your own relaxation or whatever. That's what
Absolutely.
I keep, you know, talk about like in my practice also to the clients and all. It's easier said than done. I can just say that. I mean, you know, you really have to be, it comes from within. You can tell somebody, but unless it comes from within, it's very difficult to incorporate that. So, Kate, like now towards the end of my session, you know, I really want to talk, have an insight on the practical way of life. Most of the people today are busy. They're very busy. And if we tell them that, okay, you know, these Ayurveda practices and bringing in some yoga in your morning routine is going to change your life, which can happen, but they may not have that much of a time to practice all of these practices in the morning or maybe in the evening, considering their busy life. So, are there any specific easy to do practices coming in from Ayurveda or some food tips or yogic practices which can gel well with somebody with a very busy lifestyle and still experience some changes to their body and mind?
We already sort of discussed the cleaning of the channel, digestive
Yeah.
channel with the tongue cleaning, hot water
Yeah.
drinking, you know. So even if a person
Yeah.
wants to drink tea or coffee, first the hot water, right? So
Mm.
that I think is very quick and
Yeah,
easy.
of course. I mean,
Yeah.
that's part of the process only. Anyways, you're about to have your tea. Why not have a glass of water before that?
Yeah, so I would start there. And I think another one that is also difficult, but is to move the food time to earlier in the day. So eating
Okay.
more food at the earlier meals and less at the dinner. The yoga people
In
already.
terms of the in terms of quantity, are we mentioning that? Like the portion
Yes,
sizes?
for sure. So dinner being the smallest meal of the day. You know, and lunch when the sun is at a zenith to be the highest, biggest meal of the day. People will notice a huge change in their metabolism by doing that. So I feel like that is, you know, it's not an easy, I would say, to give oneself like 6 months to work on that slowly, slowly. It doesn't have to be all the time, but it's most of the time that the food, more food earlier, less food at night. That is really a healthy routine.
And
And
it's completely the opposite. If I look at the modern way of life, it's completely the opposite. Yeah, I mean lunch is a common factor where you'll have more, but then mornings may be a little lighter and it keeps growing as the day moves on.
right. And I think a lot of people, we prioritize other things, right? We prioritize
Yeah.
our external pursuits during the day.
Yeah.
And then at night, it's like,
Correct.
oh, now I can feed my body. And now that everything else.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the mindset. Yes. And these are the same people with whom I see, you know, a lot of health conditions. Like these were the ones who would be the bulky ones or would be having thyroid conditions or on the path of maybe blood sugar imbalances happening to you, aches
Sure.
and pains in the body, a lot of other things happening. So I think one small thing, just shift that bulk to the morning hours and lighten in the evening can make huge difference to their health.
Yeah, and if I can add one more from the yoga realm, one practice that is my most recommended practice is the alternate nostril breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that one balances it balances the duality of our
Yeah.
qualities, you know, and it balances the hormones and it balances the mind and it very much equalizes.
Yeah. So is there any specific time that you would want to recommend the alternate nostril breathing, or any time through the day is okay?
I feel the most potent time for it is the morning because it's easier, you know, it's
For
just,
sure.
there's more clarity. But I do also find that it can help with sleep and stress at the end of the day. It can also be done, you know, later in the day. It can be done anytime, really. But I find that clients will gravitate towards morning or evening. depending on what they're trying to do. I mean, if you want to balance your hormones, you know, you do it in the morning. Get everything equalized and set before you.
Yeah, because everything starts from the brain, and if your brain is balanced, everything is going to flow down in a balanced manner. Great. So, Kate, my last question to you would be, tell us about your books. And you have three different books. I have just gotten a chance to kind of briefly go through your first book, for which I wrote the review. But what are the other two books all about?
The Everyday Ayurvedic Cookbook, that's a great place to start. That one's for beginners. Mm-hmm. It's about just the seasonal gunas. The second book is Cooking for a Calm, Clear Mind. So that one is great for the yoga crowd, because I talk about sattva, rajas, tamas. And according to the Bhagavad Gita, that's where we get the most information about how the mahagunas are found in foods. And there's 100 recipes in that book. And then the Guide to Self-Care, that's one that really dives deeper into Dinacharya, seasonal practices, daily practices. And there are also home remedies in that one. Mm-hmm. It's not so much like daily fare cooking like the first two books are. Yeah.
Okay. No, definitely quite interesting, because I loved your first book, and second one, I think, sounds interesting, because it's talking about sattva, rajas and tamas. And I think you're coming up with another book, which is about women's health, if I'm not wrong. Yeah.
That's right.
When is that expected?
Women's Health is released in April.
Oh, it's already there, or it's coming up?
Coming up. April 2024. Coming up. Yeah,
I think that's one of the most important books for women, I believe. I mean, you know, bringing. So you're talking about yoga and Ayurveda together in that book, or it's only about the Ayurveda concepts?
There's a little yoga talk in there. I honestly think that book is coming next. The yoga and Ayurveda book in a few years.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Looking forward to that, definitely.
Yeah.
Great. And you could also talk about the courses that you offer to the audience, whosoever gets interested, or, you know, because, I mean, I must say, the collection of courses and books and the content that you speak about is phenomenal for any yoga practitioner who wants to really delve deeper into Ayurveda. I think that can be great beginning, getting into the kind of content that you talk about.
Yeah.
Just help us understand our listeners where they can find you and the kind of courses that you offer.
The website ayurvedicliving.institute, so on the homepage, all the courses are divided by cooking, self-care, or masterclass. So a good place to start if people just kind of want to dip the feet in. If you go to, sort of say, self-care, you'll find seasonal. So you can think, oh, what season am I in? Let me just, you know, download the spring seasonal class. So then we talk about daily practices that would be most appropriate during that season. And it's the same with the cooking. So the cooking classes are also organized by season.
Okay.
Good. Yeah.
And these are all courses are like ready to use. Like you come across a seasonal guide and you go through it and you start bringing in those shifts in your life. Is it as simple as that?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's great. The point. Yeah. That's what we're hoping for. Yeah. Just all great. About getting people feeling empowered to get started, you know, with some simple change in the life.
That's the purpose, yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Great, Kate. It was really nice speaking to you and so much to learn from you. Towards our ending note, is there anything that you would want to add on before we end our session?
No, just like to thank everybody for their interest and for listening. And maybe we'll chat again when the Women's Health book comes out.
Oh, definitely. I would love to do that. I just saw that on your Instagram feed and I got really immediately interested. Okay, when is it coming?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Great. Perfect. Thank you so much, Kate, for being there. And I really love talking to you. And we'll stay connected, definitely, for your next book.
Super. All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.